Danny Barnes last appeared on Unreal Bluegrass toward the end of 2015. He had recently released Got Myself Together 10 years later, and he'd also during that calendar year won the Steve Martin Award for Excellence in Banjo and Bluegrass. Good year for Danny. Great album. No picks at all. One of the things about the album is kind of indicative of the way Danny thinks and works and processes music is he decided to do an album with no picks. It's a phenomenal album. He's now done an album with picks, and it's very traditional bluegrass. Inspired by Don Stover, the name of the new album is Stove Up. You're going to enjoy hearing from Danny again and why he decided to make this new album wearing picks and playing some pretty traditional bluegrass at a level that'll just blow your mind. Danny Barnes, fabulous banjo player, innovator, all-around cool guy. I really enjoyed Danny. I enjoyed so much having him on at the end of 2015. Glad to have the opportunity to get him back on and discuss this brand new album, Stove Up, which you're going to hear all about. Well, I'm really happy to have back with Unreal Bluegrass, Danny Barnes. How you doing, Danny?
You know, Steve, I'm doing pretty good today. Thanks for talking to me and all that stuff. Thanks for helping me with my getting my word out about my new record.
Yeah. The last time we talked was the end of 2015, and by then you had released Got Myself Together, and you had also won the Steve Martin Award for Excellence. So we talked about a lot of things then. We talked about your influences through Bill Frisell, and we talked about your practice routine, which is very long and dedicated. And I'm trying to figure out, you have to help me make that transition from, if the listeners were listening about the Got Myself Together 10 years later, that is so markedly different than style, and style-wise, from the new CD we're really talking about, which is Stove Up. So I need you to help me explain to them the not the obvious oral differences in hearing, but how do you get from Got Myself Together, which is more of a, and the Bad Livers, we talked about the Bad Livers too, is there's more of a freestyle to what you're doing to what is just really, I don't know, it's just great banjo playing straight down the middle. I don't mean to make it de minimis by saying that, but you know, you're playing Flint Hill Special, you're playing things that, and John Hardy that banjo players like to play, but you're doing them at a different level. How do you get from Got Myself Together to this Stove Up? I know it's connected to Don Stover, so maybe let's start there with his influence.
Well, let's see. Well, when I was a kid, you know, I think that record Things in Life came out around 74, somewhere right in there. And I got a hold of that record right in there. It was tough to get, you know, like the best stuff, you know, back then, because you'd have to order it out of magazines and stuff, and you didn't really have a chance to really preview it too much. So it was kind of really a real gem if you got a hold of something really good, you know. And anyway, so that record, Things in Life, it was kind of a big bomb going off in my world, because he was really interesting, because, like, you know, like, say, if you go to, like, to take banjo lessons or something like that, like, they sort of divide up banjo playing. You have, like, Keith style, mm-hmm. Scruggs style, Don Reno, and then you got, like, Clawhammer stuff or old-time stuff or whatever. You know, like, you go to a banjo camp or something, those are kind of the, roughly speaking, the tracks that they sort of, like, generally sort of put you on.
That's accurate.
You know?
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
But there's a guy like him who's kind of got his own realm or something, you know. And he was an influence on me along with Hartford and stuff, you know. But I really liked Don because he was a really good singer. And he was a songwriter as well. And, he fronted the band on that record and stuff. And he played a lot of different kinds of banjo. Like, he had... Like, I found some stuff of him doing, like, these pedal steel bends, you know, and I found, you know, he's a really good climber banjo player, and then he plays, like, some Keith stuff as well, and then he's kind of like Don Reno, too, in that, like, if you really, sometimes when Don is playing the Earl vocabulary, it sounds like Earl.
Absolutely.
But if you really listen, he's sort of playing things flipped around and stuff, especially if you take time to stop and write them down. He has a different, he sort of plays Earl a little bit inside and out. And Don does that as well. So sometimes in a cursory listen, you think, oh, that's an Earl thing. But when you really stop and figure out what he's doing something in a little bit different way. And it's really cool to study those guys. But I just always liked him. And he was a real sort of like plaintive singer. And he was just one of those guys I always kind of felt like was a little bit undiscovered, but I really just loved his music. Like I could just play that record from now on. I just love that record, and I love it just as a fan. The vibe of it, the sequencing of the record, just the sound of it, and you know, it just had a cool vibe. And so, you know, it's like I've never made a record that is sort of just like a bluegrass record or
right.
an acoustic bluegrass record, right over the plate record. I never have done that. And I've been making, you know, shucks, I have, I don't know, more than 20 records out, I think, maybe more, but I've got a lot of records, and I never have done that. So it was just something that I really wanted to try, and it was a real different experience for me because normally I write songs and write music, and that's kind of like sort of like having a play going on where you wrote the script or something and you're in it or something. So you can sort of, those two things can kind of symbiotically work together to sort of take care of it or something, you know.
Yeah.
But like in this kind of deal here, it was just kind of a little bit more of a challenge for me, really, because I'm not really known for that world. And there's so many great records in that world, too, like, earlier in the year, Rob McCory released his banjo record, which is absolutely amazing.
Mm-hmm.
the bar for banjo is really high, you know. And so it was a little bit of a challenge for me to do that. It was kind of like if you were gonna go a few rounds with Joe Louis or something. It was pretty daunting task. But the way Nick, my friend Nick Forrester, produced the record.
And Nick, I think most people recognize Nick from Hot Rise and maybe E-Town, I don't know, but we know who Nick
that's
is.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's his kind of bread and butter, those two things
right.
here, I think. You know, and people know him, he was in Hot Rise for 30 years.
Yeah.
All that stuff, and maybe longer, I think. And, you know, has a, you know, that radio show and so forth. But, yeah, he produced the record, and our idea, we talked about it for a while, and our idea was to try to make a bluegrass record like those records in the 70s that they made. And there were a lot of records that came out in the 70s, and they it was just like a really good example are those Benny Martin records,
yeah.
where he just had a big band playing.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And even though he had a lot more guests, and this record Stove Up, it's more of a static lineup, you know, it's the same. But the concept being we were just got some friends together and sat in an open room and played. And I don't know, that's not, you don't hear a lot of records made that way too much. Mostly people try to, you know, they have a little bit different aesthetic about how they're going to record and stuff and to leave some room open for editing and things like that. Whereas we were sort of a little bit painted into a corner in that regard. So what we were trying to do was really just trying to make a vibe, you know. So that was what I felt like that was the strongest thing for me to try to do was because, I mean, there's so many of these guys that have these really super intricate, perfect banjo playing approaches. And that's just never it's not really been my bailiwick really so much that way of playing. You know, it's not really been my part of the library, so to speak. So my thing has always been a little bit more of like a greasy thing or like a feel or a vibe or. You know, or just like, because I use the banjo really as sort of like a way to get ideas out, you know, like I'm not an instrumentalist in that strict sense. I use it more as a place to get things that I make up out, you know. So anyway, this is a little bit different way of doing it. And this thing, I was just kind of playing bluegrass banjo.
Yeah, man, tearing it up, too.
And I also have this kind of theory. I have a theory. One of my theories is I have this theory called secret music. Have I told you about
that? You did, yes, but explain it again because I know exactly what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Yeah, the secret music is like the music that people sit around and play for each other. That's not, they don't really play it for recordings and they don't really play it on their shows so much. So like that record is also like the stuff that I sit around and play since I was, before I was even old enough to drive. It's like stuff that's really near and dear to my heart. There's a couple pieces that I've written in the last few years that's on it, but basically it's tunes that I, like 8 More Miles of Louisville, first time I heard that tune was I saw Grandpa Jones in about 1970 or 71 in Temple, Texas at the War Memorial Auditorium, and he sang and played that song. Yeah. And I've always loved that song since then. So that's a long time ago, man. Like, that's quite a ways back.
Let me ask you this, Danny. I'm talking about some of the songs and the structure of some of them in a real light way as we go forward. But so from Don Stover, do you get... and the album is called Stove Up, and we're talking to Danny Barnes if you're just calling in, so I get where that comes from. But is it a vibe that you get from Don? You're not trying to reproduce here what you might hear on a Don. I get the feeling that it's you absorbed this vibe from him and that record that you've talked about already, and it's influenced what you've done, but you're not reproducing songs note for note or even trying to do that. I don't think so. Am I correct?
No. Like... I found a lot of recordings online of Don just playing, you know. And so I was trying to make a record that I was really trying to play like Don, not necessarily transcribe his music because that's already there, you know. I was trying to sort of play like Don in some songs that were near and dear to my heart. So it's a little different approach. But, yeah, Don has got this way of playing that's like, the chords are always these big events in Don's playing, and I don't really have any other way of describing it, but like sometimes when you hear a banjo player play, if you isolate the banjo, you can't really tell what the chords are so much because they're sort of playing a little bit more linearly,
mm-hmm.
whereas he has this, every chord is like a giant boulder just fell on the ground, you know, because it's way of playing. And he also has this, you know, he's using an arch top banjo, which
right.
is a little different sound, you know. And his attack is a little bit different, his hand positioning, and, you know, he has a lot of things kind of sort of electric guitar-y in the same way Don Reno did, you know, kind of like where it's almost like you almost hear like 1950s country electric guitar playing in there somehow, too, which I think is pretty irresistible.
You know, it's funny you mentioned chords because I think that if we went back and listened to your interview from the end of 2015, when you're talking about Bill Frisell, I think you're talking about the chords.
Yeah.
And honestly, it just occurred to me. I think you're picking up on that as your roadway into these things. But I think we talked about that when you talked about Bill Frisell, jazz guitar player. People are listening.
Because it's like he now that you mention it, I'm sure I probably sound like a broke record in certain.
No. I think it's interesting that those are what you pull on.
He's the master of. I think he's the master and man. But with Don's playing, you know, it's like it's just like it's really cool. Like even when you hear him play, I found quite a few recordings where he was just playing by himself, and it's just like you can hear the chords in there really well, you know. And so it's not the way I normally play, outlining those things in that regard. But I just enjoyed trying to play like Don, you know. He just kind of had this way. He was like my friend Leo Kotke has this word he uses. He calls it. He says, laying into it. Like I found some recordings of Leo playing, you know, back in the 70s, and I was going, Leo, man, what was going on there, man? You, like, about, like, ripped the strings off the guitar on that TV show, you know?
That's the first time I saw him was on PBS. And that's what you're talking about. And I went out and bought a 12-string guitar because of that, which was a stupid thing for me to do. Yeah.
But that's what he called it, laying into it.
Okay.
Really get in there and lay into it, you know, is what he called it. You know,
okay.
Like that way I was really laying into it. You know, he uses that phrase. So I feel like Don kind of lays into it a little more than I, you know, naturally play, you know. So I was just trying to kind of lay into it the way I thought Don would play. So I was trying to sort of copy his, like, method acting or something.
Danny, that's the point I'm trying to make is, I get this from your playing, from what I've listened to and from our last conversations, is it's all Danny Barnes, but you pull in influences or impressions from other people, but it's still Danny Barnes. And even though you're playing on this album, you know, Bill Cheatham and 8 More Miles to Louisville, like you said, and Fireball and Flint Hill Special, it's still Danny Barnes playing them. You're not trying to, you're influenced by things, but it's still you, even though you're playing in a bluegrass acoustic style.
Yeah, I appreciate that because, you know, I feel like that's one thing that you can sort of give people from my generation have is, you know, like guys my age roofed houses and fixed cars and dropped transmissions out of trucks and, you know, did things like that. So they were sort of like in the earth a little bit, you know, or whatever. So I feel like that life experience can come through in the music in a good way, you know. Sometimes, you know, if a person, I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about anybody's picking, because I think everybody should play, and I enjoy a lot of different kinds of music, but, you know, if you're singing a tune about going to jail or something like that, you know, it's pretty easy to tell if the person singing has ever really got locked up or not, you know, and in my case, I've been locked up. I feel perfectly justified, you know, singing something like that, because I've had that life experience, you know, and stuff like that. And so it just, there's like some elements in there of like essence, I suppose. You know?
That's a great way to relate to what you're talking about. I've got 17 tunes on here. Tell me first the players. We've talked about Jason Carter maybe before
Jason
we got
Carter,
on. But yeah, tell us who,
yeah,
tell me who's on the thing.
Yeah, Jason Carter, who's like, man, see, I really always adored Benny Martin, and Jason was the first person I ever met that, well, Mike Bubb as well, who plays bass on mm-hmm. Jason was the first guy I ever met that spent a lot of time with Benny and knew a lot about Benny and would talk about Benny and could imitate Benny and play like Benny and stuff. But Jason is, he plays kind of old fiddling, old style, but it's kind of new too, so he's a cool foil for me on account of you can hear like the Paul Warren and things like that in there and the Benny Martin, but at the same time, he's really familiar with like, you know, more contemporary changes or whatever, you know, or approaches and stuff. So he's a really good foil for me on there, and he plays his butt off on there. And then Nick Forster, of course, plays guitar, and he's like a master of all this stuff. He can play all these instruments, and he's a real musical guy to have around because he has that thing with the E-Town where he is the musical director. So he'll have three completely different artists on the show and a house band, and he has a way of sort of just working up pieces together, you know, and in a day of rehearsal or whatever, and making the show out of it. So he's really fast at like getting to the point, you know, with stuff. Like he doesn't have to hunt around too much. So he's really brilliant on orchestrating things and recording techniques as well. So he's the guitarist on there. And then Mike Bubb on bass, of course, which Mike has, you know, won a ton of awards from the IBMA on upright, you know, and is well respected like bluegrass guy, you know.
Maybe one of the coolest guys ever too.
Yeah, he's a good guy, smart guy.
He's a great guy.
Little known fact about him is he can imitate everyone in bluegrass music.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, if you ride around in a car with him, he imitates, you know, the Osborne Brothers, the Flatten Strugs, and Jim and Jesse.
He's a pretty good, isn't he? Hey, Danny, didn't he start out kind of playing banjo, or why do I
he
think that?
Awesome banjo.
That's what I thought.
Get him to play.
Yeah.
Him and Ron Block, I think, were picking buddies, and really good banjo player, I think.
I have, of the 17 songs that I count on the new Stove Up album, I count, are there three that are really just fiddle banjo duets, or am I missing one, or is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Just the banjo and the fiddle there.
Yeah, and I've got John Hardy and Bill Cheatham, and I have my note here, says Patty on the Turnpike. I think that's the three, and those are just remarkable, whether that's the three or not. I think that's what I've written down. But
yeah, it sounds like we're just getting ready to self-ignite. What's that word called? Combustion.
Spontaneous combustion.
Spontaneously combust.
You guys, you and Danny, you and Jason really play well, and you're right. He jumps into a tune is my pedestrian way of describing it. So he's right there, and he's but then some of the runs as you're doing the banjo stuff, and he's running up and down the fingerboard. And I thought, well, this is great. It's some of the best playing I've heard, Jason. I've been a fan of Jason's for a long time, but I think he's really, you know, fills in just what he needs to fill in on these fiddle banjo parts. It really, you guys do this great together.
Thanks, man. Yeah, and you know we're jamming too. I mean, that's the thing. Is like we're actually those songs that we recorded are all, we're really just kind of sitting around playing. We just picked a bunch and then recorded everything, you know.
Oh.
So a lot of those things are, you know, we just picked, you know. So I just felt like, you know, a lot of times you hear these records that are super slick, and that's cool, and there's a place for that, you know. It's like, but there's also like a place for like a burrito or something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You go get a fine meal in a restaurant, everything's all worked out, you know, in terms of everything. And then sometimes you just want a falafel, you know. So this is kind of like a little bit more funky thing, you know.
Well, it is.
We're really playing, you know. So it's like what we would do if we were sitting in a dressing room getting ready to go on or something.
It's funny you mentioned that. The Rookwood Deer Chase has a different intro than I've ever heard on that tune before. You know? And I'm thinking...
Nick going, hey, let's just play something spacey right here.
Yeah, well,
that was Nick there.
He
came up with that idea, you know.
And then you have vocals I've got on three tunes. Now, let me say this. Your vocal, you mentioned the word greasy, and you've used it before. You have a very bluesy type of vocal style, and I'll say greasy because you've used it, but it seems like whatever I hear you singing, it kind of comes out that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's. I spent a lot of time listening to those Delta Blues guys and stuff like that. So that's what it's also just like my singing. You can hear like the life experience in there too. You know, like this the life and going through stuff.
Yeah,
I think that's what I think is as a like an actor. You know, in a part, what I'm doing is sort of like an actor. Where you're singing a tune, you're sort of like in a little movie or something, and you kind of gotta. Say you gotta say the poetry in a believable way. You know, it's not enough to me to sing the song technically correct where there's no meaning. You know, it's like you kind of got to figure out where the meaning is of that poetry. And so, anyway, that's kind of what I like to think about. You know, something too that influences a lot of my banjo playing too are them Tex-Mex accordion players. I spent a lot of time listening to those guys. You ever listen to that?
Yeah.
Like Flaco Jimenez.
Yes, Flaco, yes.
I really like all those guys. I got to know that guy Santiago Jimenez at one part of my life and toured with him a bit and played with him. My buddy Mark Rubin.
What do you get from that, Danny? What do you get from that accordion, Tex-Mex?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. If you check it out, what's wacky is... The tunes a lot of times, and the Bad Livers recorded one called Salud Damas a Tejas, which is a Narciso Martinez tune. He was one of the early Conjunto Norteño guys down in the valley there. His name was Narciso Martinez, and most of his recordings were just him and a bajo player. But there's like this weird thing going on with those melodies, man. It's kind of like that kind of banjo playing I really dig, where it's sort of diatonic and sort of like, you know, one-handed on a piano or whatever in terms of where the melody lays out, but it's got these interesting little twists and turns in real normal ways, you know. It's not like, well, here's a substitution where, you know, this was a melodic minor scale, you know, superimposed over this or something like that. It wasn't like that. It's like, it's more diatonically conceptualized, but there's just some interesting turns of phrases in there, and to be honest with you, one of my things I do is every now and then I'll go through and learn a bunch of those tunes. And, man, they lay out on the banjo really nice.
Really?
And it's just, it's like a way of playing the banjo melodically in a really different way that's super, super melody-oriented, you know. Those tunes, like those classic conjunto accordion tunes, or the instrumentals especially, are just really iconic in terms of these melodies. I've heard these melodies all my life because I grew up, you know, in Texas and had a lot of Mexican friends and lived in Mexican neighborhoods and went to a lot of Mexican restaurants and seen a lot of Mexican bands. And a lot of these, you know, melodies are really iconic, you know. I mean, like Viva Seguin, you know, a lot of these tunes, like Monterey Polka, a lot of these tunes are in, you know, Oye Corazon, that Valerio Longoria tune and all that. It's really like... They're super, like, just like massive, you know. But they're kind of simple in a sense. Like, if you write them down, they're not like, it's not like writing down Charlie Parker solo or something, you know. But at the same time, it's really greasy and funky and cool, but their note choices are really neat. And what's kind of cool is sometimes it's real banjo-like, and that sometimes some of the note choices will kind of rub a little bit because maybe they're doing a long lick on a really long pull of the bellows, and maybe in that chord that note ain't available, and so they kind of got to get the next note over.
I was going to ask you.
Kind of like when that early recording of Foggy Mountain Breakdown where Lester plays that E7 and stuff like that. Where there's just some really cool like harmonic stuff that kind of pops up that you know, it's kind of like in and out at the same time. You know?
I was going to ask you, cool, I was going to ask you, Danny, when you're talking about, now we're talking about Mexican accordion playing, but I was going to ask you, because when I visualize it in my mind, do you think some of those styles are because of the way the instrument is made? I mean, the buttons are where they are, and you have
Absolutely.
You know?
Same way with a banjo, like it has, you know, it has certain things it wants to do, and like I probably talked about this on the last interview, so forgive me for repeating myself,
okay.
But they have these things when you're writing for like an orchestra or a quartet or something, they have these orchestral manuals that tell you, they're like a dictionary of the orchestra, and they'll have each instrument of the orchestra, and it'll tell you like what the high note is, the low note, the effective range, what the timbre is, and what clef they're in, you know, like, and what, if some of the instruments are transposed, you know, like the saxes are transposed and stuff, and certain horns are transposed, and like, and then like, there's like one little trick you need to know about that instrument, you know, like this note tends to be a little flat, so you don't want to put that in unison with something else that's the same time, you know,
yeah.
Stuff like that you need to know about it, you know, like, but yeah, I think that's really interesting, you know, that like the playing styles, you know, develop around the instruments, and that's sort of like a symbiotic relationship, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah. That's when you mentioned that, I kept visualizing this thing in my head, and I thought, well, maybe, so I went out on a limb and asked you, but I want to get back to the album, because I will get sidetracked, so we're talking to Danny Barnes about his new CD Stove Up, and we hit on a lot of the tunes and just, I think, the general feel of it. Everybody should know there's a lot of straight-ahead bluegrass. There's Bluegrass Express. You even play Steel Guitar Rag. We've mentioned 8 Miles to Louisville, Bill Cheatham, Farewell Blues, Fireball. These are Flint Hill Special. You do a real up-tempo version of old Liza Jane. I think it's up-tempo for a lot that I've heard.
Yeah.
But
and that's pretty much Don Stowe. I learned that from...
Did you? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, that's a Don Stover arrangement and stuff.
There's tons in Black Diamond. There's tons of great music, and you end it with Foggy Mountain Special, which is by nature funky, but I think you make it a little funkier in your version.
Yeah, that's kind of a little bit of a Texas sound in there. You know, the Western swing sound, I think, a little bit there. And but yeah, the Black Diamond, that one is a Don Stover, and the Rockwood Deer Chase is Don Stover, and so is that old Liza Jane. All three of those are on that record, Things in Live.
Okay.
But a lot of that stuff is like, you know, right in the bluegrass pantheon, or whatever you call that, in the classic part of the library or whatever of bluegrass classics and stuff.
Oh yeah.
There's that Blue Ridge Express, that was from Eddie Shelton. Did you ever hear about Eddie Shelton?
I love Eddie Shelton.
Yeah, he's a good picker. He was the first, you know, one of the first banjo players I saw, him and Alan Mundy, you know, from where I'm from.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys were, you know, like the big daddies down there in that regard, because they, you know, because most of the banjo players were in the Southeast or whatnot, and so they were the guys that lived around Oklahoma.
I've heard Alan talk about him a lot, and I looked into his music. And we're not talking about Alan Shelton. I'm talking about Alan Mundy listening to Eddie Shelton. So I mean, there's a difference.
Yeah.
And I make that mistake when I speak every once in a while, but I've heard Alan Mundy. He's talked to me about Eddie and the influence on his playing, which I think must be pretty remarkable. I'm a big fan of what Alan does on the way his approach to banjo is.
Me too. He's always been a great banjo player. Just super tone guy.
You helped me then bridge from Got Myself Together 10 years later to this stove up, which has we've described them all. I mean, you've got a tune on here, Danny, that's two of them that are under 2 minutes. So maybe three of them that are under 3 minutes. So you're just plowing
that's
ahead
Ramones,
on.
That's a Ramones fan.
I didn't expect that one, but all right. You can take the stage, you bang one out, and you'll leave. I get it. Okay. Oh, man. Well, this is great. I think, by the time this show airs, Stove Up will be available for, for 4 or 5 days. I think the release date is maybe March 3rd.
Yeah, it came out Friday, so
okay.
They can order it off my site. And I'm carrying it around on my gigs, and then it's also on iTunes,
okay.
Spotify, and all that
okay.
stuff, Amazon. And
what's your website? I know what it is, but tell the listeners.
DannyBarnes.com.
Okay. I know, but you know what? If I don't ask, I'll get the wrong one, and someone will.
Chris, I don't mind it.
Chris Jones was on a week or so ago, and you would think ChrisJones.com, but no, there's too many Chris Jones, so he's ChrisJonesGrass.com. Well, I would have never known that.
Oh, nice.
All right, Daniel, listen, man, I appreciate you being available, and I really love this. It's so different musically from we'll say, the most recent CD you did, but it still has your style, and it still has your devotion and your love of the music, and as you have just explained, all these influences into you, Danny, they all come through, and they come out as Danny Barnes, and this happens to be more of a straight-ahead bluegrass thing, but boy, it's phenomenal. Stove Up is just great.
Man, thanks for listening, and thanks for telling people about it, and thanks for giving me a chance to talk about it, Steve. Hey. Thanks for what you do, too, man. You help a lot of musicians get their word out and let people know, and you guys, doing what you're doing is really important because people, it's hard to find stuff. And
mm-hmm.
You point a lot of people in good directions.
So yeah, I'm trying.
You're a real critical part of the equation, man. We appreciate you, you know.
Listen, I'm going to start this show off. When the interviews are always in the second hour. I'm going to start the show off with Isotope 709, what I'm going to ask you to do as we end this interview. What would you like to play at the conclusion of this interview from the album Stove Up?
I like to play the last song. How about play the last song, the Foggy Mountain Special?
Yeah, man. All right. Perfect. I'll do that. All right, Danny, listen, I'll see you somewhere down the road. I appreciate your time.
Okay, bless your heart. And also, can you send me this link so I can share it with all my people?
Yeah, oh, yeah, sure. When it's already up to go, I'll send it to you and you can get it.
All right, man.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks a lot, Steve.
All right, see you, Danny.